From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last week on Election Day when a record number of women's names appeared on ballots across the country. More women ran for federal, state, and local offices this year than in any other election in U.S. history. And many female candidates cited the 2016 election as the reason for entering the political arena. According to Emily's List, a nonprofit that helps progressive women run for office, more than 40,000 women have expressed interest in their own candidacy since President Trump was elected. The group's record from 2014 to 2016 was 920 women on the ballot. Now, major political parties typically scout out potential candidates. They recruit. But this year, a number of first-timers, both women and men, and again, we're talking first-timers on the ballot this year. How difficult is it to do that? Can you just run for office without any experience in politics? Obviously, you can, but the question is, how do you get on a ballot? How do you get taken seriously by a party? How do you decide you're going to run for local office or state office or federal office? What specifically does it take? A workshop tonight will address the process of entering the political arena for the first time. And if you're like me, I grew up thinking, why doesn't my dad run for office? I hope everybody thinks that about their dads. But, he used to tell me, well, the process is ridiculous. The amount of money is ridiculous. And it just beats people down. Well, participants tonight are going to learn how to develop a volunteer base, finance campaign, attract donations, and network. We're getting a preview of that forum this hour with our guests, who will share their experience both running for office and helping understand what the campaign process is like. Joining us in studio is Gary Putup, former candidate for the 134th Assembly District Z. He is a WXXI volunteer, we're happy to say, and he's helping lead that event tonight at 7:30. We'll tell you more about that in a moment. Nice to see you in the studio again.
Thanks, Evan.
It's always great to have you, Gary. Andrew Hollister is here, former candidate for Rochester City Council, and you recently saw his name on the ballot for Lieutenant Governor of New York State. Andrew, welcome back to the program. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, tonight, 7:30 at Brew Coffee. Where's Brew Coffee, Gary Putup?
It's at Brooks Landing, and on Genesee, I believe it's the intersection of Genesee and Thurston. And this is something that's obviously free and open to the public. It's been coordinated by John Borick from Break the Bubble. That's a program that the University of Rochester has, and the intent of the program is to get students involved in life off of campus, to get out of that bubble of campus. And so, we anticipate that some of these, the audience is going to be primarily students, but anybody can come. And actually, I know John would want to invite everybody, because it's important to the university to have some interaction between the students and the city of Rochester.
All right, so 7:30 tonight, Brew Coffee, free event, open to the public, Breaking the Bubble, How to Run for Office. And again, if you're like me, if you're thinking maybe you want to run, or maybe there's someone you think, oh my gosh, this person in my life would be so good on city council, on the school board, state assembly, for the state senate, for anything, this is a good chance to do that tonight. So let me ask both of you guys if you agree with what my dad used to tell me. So not only did my dad tell me, look, I'm not interested in politics. There's way more money and sort of the dark arts that he wanted to have to explain to a young kid. But he also told me this, and I've never forgotten this. My dad said to me one day, he said, Ev, let me tell you what happens to idealistic people who go into politics. If they get elected, one of two things will happen. They will get beaten down and quit, or they will become what they despise. What do you think, Andrew Hollister?
Well, I'm not quitting yet, so
you're going to make more future runs.
Possibly. I'm definitely going to support other people through the process at the very least. But I would say that the way New York State politics is set up and the system is set up, it does lend to corruption. I don't think it's any coincidence that we've had almost every other week high-level elected officials or people close to different administrations either being indicted, accused of corruption, or arrested.
So wait a second. The Libertarian is going to endorse public financing of campaigns?
I did not say that. Oh, okay. Nope. No. And that piece goes past election and campaign finance. That piece goes into the actual system once you're in office. I think that there's many things we can do to fix both.
All right. So there's a lot to discuss going forward on that. Gary Putup, what would you say to my father?
I think
is it too cynical?
Even for me.
even for you.
Yeah, you know, if you talk to my wife, I've been doing this for about 12 years, working on campaigns. I manage some campaigns and some other things. And after every electoral cycle, I sit back and I tell her, I'm never going to do that again. And every electoral cycle, I get enthused and I see people that are out there, putting themselves out there. And they really are. It's a marathon. And people like Andrew, I met Andrew when he was running for city council. And I get very enthused when I see young people doing this. I agree with him that there is corruption. I don't know that it's limited to New York State. I do think that a lot of it has to deal with campaign financing and the way we do it. And I think there is a second aspect, and that's the two-party system. And unfortunately, sometimes what happens, people, I think, are very tempted to give up on principles to get along. But in the end, I think what your dad was saying, I don't know that those two things are inevitable. And we see this with some older politicians and people that have been in it their entire life, and they aren't corrupt. We do see a lot of corruption, but I think it's like anything else. You know, we see the bad, but we forget that, you know, of the hundreds of legislators in Albany, yeah, there have some that have been bad and gone to jail. But the vast majority are good people trying to do the right thing.
I think that's a really important distinction. And so let me listen to a soundbite from Jen Lunsford, who ran for office for the first time this past year, this election cycle, and nearly won. So the reason I want to listen to this for, is a couple of things. This will kick off a conversation, I think, about what each of our guests sees as the biggest obstacles to running for office. We want to talk about money. We want to talk about how much you have to do to organize. How far in advance do you need to start planning for various things? And frankly, you know, we got a couple of guys on the panel here. It's good to hear a woman's voice here. So Jen Lunsford, a woman who ran for office for the first time for state senate and lost to state senator Rich Funke, but nearly beat him. And let's listen to what she had to say about that process.
I'm so excited to see women stepping up, and not just women, but women of color and younger women. It's very, very hard for women to feel like they can. And I hope that my run and doing what I did with a child and with a full-time job inspires people and to let them know that they can, that there are obstacles, but that you can overcome them. I was a nobody with nothing. I had no name recognition. I think when our first poll, I had 3% name recognition to Rich Funke's 94%. The day I announced, I had $0 in my campaign account, and he had something like almost 400,000.
All right, so Jen Lunsford is pointing out a couple of things there. When you start, you know, unless you're in the public eye, you're probably going to start with almost no name recognition. She had 3% in her district to 94% for her opponent. Is that the biggest hurdle? Is money the biggest hurdle? Is time the biggest hurdle? I'm going to ask both of you. I'll start with you, Andrew. You've run for city council and lieutenant governor. What is the single biggest hurdle to running?
Oh, geez, the single biggest hurdle. Well, actually, let me talk about something that we didn't mention. If you're running as a third party, the biggest hurdle is probably ballot access in New York State. Mm-hmm. If you're running for a party that does have ballot access, name recognition is really important. But I think probably the biggest hurdle, once again, as a third party, is going to be getting people to consider voting differently than they normally do on maybe a party line that they're not used to. So I would almost say habits. Habits are probably a big barrier, name recognition being second.
Okay, Gary.
And I agree with Andrew, and I think whether you're a minority party or not, one of the things I found when I ran, and I think we see this polarization, is getting anybody to change their mind outside of their party. I mean, we've gotten to the point where, and I can tell you this, when I was going door to door running, there were doors I would knock on. I would say, well, I'm a Democrat. And, you know, people would ask, are you a Democrat or Republican? Although I have no party affiliation now, at the time I was a Democrat. And people would say, like, well, if you're a Democrat, I'm going to vote for you. Or if you're a Republican, or if they were Republican, there's no way I'm going to vote for you.
They would say, so they'd ask you straight away, are you a Republican or a Democrat?
Yes. And it was kind of, it was funny, but not funny. And I would think, even as a Democrat, people would say, well, if you're a Democrat, no problem, I'll vote for you. And I would feel that, well, so you're not listening to whatever it is I have to say or what my positions are. So I agree with Andrew, but I don't think it's just limited to that. But the money is huge. I can tell you this, when I ran and when I manage campaigns, and that we start talking about sitting down with candidates and tell them one of the very first things that you should do is make a list of everyone you know. And I see Andrew smiling because I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, or Libertarian, or Green. Make a list of everyone you know. Who did you go to high school with? Who are your neighbors? Who do you do business with? And start making a list, because you're going to be asking these people for money. And a lot of the organization that you need to do, you know, with your volunteers, about getting mailers ready, posters ready, you know, who's going to be doing lit drops, that all depends on financing. So you might spend from the year prior to a Labor Day doing nothing but raising money and preparing for that sprint at the end. Unfortunately, it is so much about money today.
Congratulations. Everyone listening who was thinking about running is now not. So
no, you know, and it's, if I could interrupt, because Andrew and I were talking about this, you know, and I wanted to really be balanced, and tonight is being realistic, but not discouraging people. And you see what Jen did. And she came really close. And one of the things that people have to, I think, understand when they run, you may not be successful the first time, but it's a learning experience, and that is so important. And I think we're going to see her and others again in the future.
I got to say this though on the money thing. The Buffalo News just did sort of a postmortem of the McMurray campaign, and inside the chaos of the Nate McMurray campaign for Congress. And it was a good piece. It was interesting. I didn't know that he had gone through four campaign managers, never really felt comfortable until the end when he hired Nicole Hushlerae. And, you know, I'm sure every campaign is a little chaotic. That's the nature of these things. And there's going to be differences of opinion. But the one thing that Nate McMurray admitted was he wasn't good at asking people for money. He didn't like to do it. And when a lot of people were pressuring him, you got to call these people, you got to call your old friends. Just like you just said, Gary, you got to make a list of everybody you went to school with, all your old friends. Who are your wealthiest friends? Where do they live? Will they give you money? Nate McMurray admitted he really didn't want to do it. And I sort of don't blame him. I would get nauseated by that. What you're saying is that will be part of it. Yes.
Yes. And that is not unusual. I went through it. I think most people do. I think I had a little bit of an advantage working for nonprofits, where you had to make an ask. You know,
you're used to asking people.
Well, yeah, fundraising is knowing, you know, it's fundraising. You're sitting back, and at some point in time, you're trying to convince someone that you're the best person for the job, and why they should part with hard-earned money to support you. If I can say one thing, because you brought up Nicole's name, and I think this is really important with what we're talking about, what Jen went through, and one of the organizations Nicole's associated with, and I hope that especially the women in the audience pay attention. That's womenelect.org. I'm a supporter of that organization. If the listeners aren't familiar with it, it is an organization. It's nonpartisan. And it helps and trains women to run for office and to work on campaigns. I'm sure a lot of people in the audience are familiar with Mary Lupien, who ran for city council. I know Andrew is. Mm-hmm. And Mary ran a very good campaign. And a lot of that had to do with the training she received from womenelect.org. So there is something out there for women to help them train. But that is something that, you know, and we can get into, is that there's really no, other than that, there's really no schools to teach you how to do this.
Okay. Andrew, how did you do it raising money? I mean, did you make those lists? Did you make the ask?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So, nobody really likes asking for money. So that's the thing. And I went to a class that talked about how candidates should raise money. And the person leading the class, who's raised millions of dollars for campaigns across the country, literally said, nobody I've ever taught likes raising money. Nobody wants to call their friends and say, hey, will you do this for yourself? Now, me personally, I don't mind raising money for nonprofits.
See,
things
that's
like
the thing.
That.
That's
it's for
the,
other
that's
people.
That's the point.
Yeah.
I actually don't mind pledge drives. And
yep, yep.
I always sign up for extra shifts because I like reminding our community, if you appreciate public radio, WXXI NPR, and you don't support it, it could eventually go away, and you need to vote with your wallet. And I vote with my wallet, and I hope you do too. I have no problem with that, but I would feel very differently if I'm going, I need your money because I want to go to Congress. I want to be on city council. That's hard for me.
And you're
saying it was hard for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I went through the list, and some people you don't even call because you're nervous or afraid to ask them for money, you know, or so it's interesting. This last campaign I ran was totally different, though. As far as we didn't have
your campaign
ask.
for lieutenant governor.
Yeah. A lot of people just, they would show up, they'd hear the message, and they would give us money. We probably could have raised way more if we were asking for
it. Well, see, that's the thing. If I were your consultant, I would say, no, you don't get away with that, Hollister.
Yep, exactly.
You still have to ask them.
Yep. And we did make phone calls. We did make asks. And I can say absolutely 110% when we asked, we raised more money. But it was just the weirdest feeling. It was an uncomfortable feeling. And there's a school of thought that says the candidate shouldn't be asking for the money unless it's just a phone call. But at an event, a fundraiser or a director of development should be asking for the money. There's different schools of thought. I can tell you guaranteed 100% of the time that I saw, that I observed, when the candidate asked for the money, they raise the most money.
So I want to hear your pitches. All right. So you call me. We're old high school friends. You know that I'm now, I work for Goldman Sachs, you know, like stealing poor people's money. Or I'm just kidding. That's not what Goldman Sachs does. That was a joke and a bad one. My point is.
How to ask for money.
Yeah, I want to hear from you. Yeah. You call me up. So, we haven't talked in a while.
So it depends on the relationship. It depends on what's important to you. If I know something that's important to you, say you work for Goldman Sachs, maybe income tax is really important to you. I would probably approach the conversation from saying, hey, I want your input on this. Will you look at our plan to eliminate the state income tax?
Okay.
Will you go through it?
Sure.
Will you review it? I know that means a lot to you because you pay a lot of taxes. If you think this is viable, will you support us to help make this happen? Something along those lines. And go through it with the person and say, this is our plan. We think we got to do this, this, and this. Will you support that? And some people will. And some people write a big check. Other people say, I'm not sure if I'm going to invest in that. But for somebody who works for Goldman Sachs, I would approach it as an investment and ask them, how much do you pay in income tax? And if we were to eliminate it, how much money are you going to save over the next 4 years?
Now, what if I say to you, look, I'll support you, but I want you to change your plan. I need to see something else from you, and then I can write you a check.
It depends. If the plan falls...
It depends?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, if the plan, the changes they want to see fall in line with our principles and it's a good suggestion, then sure, we'll make the modification. Something we talked about all the time is if you measured our plans against perfection, we'll fail always because we're just people like anybody else and we're not saying we have the best ideas. We're open to making them better. So if that person said, yeah, you know what? I'll give you $10,000, but... you should make this tweak because X, Y, Z. And we take it to the policy team and the policy team analyzes it and goes, yeah, actually, that makes a lot of sense. That would make this plan way better. Then sure, we'll do it. But if it compromises our principles or our ideals, and we actually said no to a sizable amount of money throughout the campaign, tens of thousands of dollars.
What percentage of phone calls when you're asking for money end up in a yes, that you get some kind of a check?
Pretty high percentage.
A pretty high percentage?
Yeah, that's why it's so important. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Gary, I want to hear your pitch.
Yeah, and Andrew's right. You'll get a fair amount. I don't know that you can put a percentage on it. Probably... everybody will send you something.
Yeah.
And I think the important thing
that's
here,
a surprise, by the way.
They feel guilty.
Personal touch. And a lot. So think about this. A lot of your friends in that too share your values. And that's why they end up being your friends. In regards to your question to Andrew, we write out scripts. You know, we don't want to put somebody on the phone with basically without a script. And the other thing is in regards to the reluctance. I've had a number of candidates where I've managed their campaigns. What you do is you set aside time and I'll sit at the phone with them. Because if you tell them, hey, from 7 to 8 tonight, I want you to make phone calls, you know what? They don't do it because it is so uncomfortable. So literally sit in a room with them and call this person, call that
person. You have to chain them to the phone.
It's true.
It's true. Yeah, people don't like it. And that's a good thing. I guess that's a good thing. But what you want to do is you want to appeal to your shared values.
Okay.
So you call a friend and say, listen.
Give me the script. Here we go.
You know, this is Gary Evan. You know, I'm trying to do this without my script.
No, I want you to ad lib it, but close to the script that you remember.
You know, Evan, I'm thinking about running for the state assembly. And, you know, you and I, you know, in our conversations have shared a lot of conversation. Well, we've had a lot of conversations. And we certainly have shared values. We believe, and I'm going to make some stuff up, so because I know you're a nonpartisan and a journalist. But, you know, we believe in maybe a woman's right to make her own medical choices. Maybe we believe in sensible gun control. And maybe we believe in lower government involvement and regulation. We all believe in these things. And when I go to Albany, you know, if I get elected and I go to Albany, those are the kind of shared values that I'm going to push for, you know, when I'm there. And so, I don't know how much you want to get into specifics for two reasons. And this is the cold reason is because then the person does that without end up like, well, I would want you to vote for X, Y, and Z, and I don't want to do that. You stick with the values. The other thing is you have a lot of phone calls to make.
Yeah.
If you spend 20 minutes on the phone with one person, in an hour, you're making three calls. And one thing as a manager, you'll track like, you know what, you need to make 10 calls an hour. And it's like that. So
what do you say if I say to you, look, are you on the phone asking me for money? Let's cut to the chase.
I say, yes. Yeah. Look at Evan. You and I are on the same page. You know what needs to be done. And this is what I'm looking for. I'm hoping that you can contribute. And depending on who the person is, I give an amount. Because if you just say to somebody, you know, can you write me a check? You know, old school, can you write me a check? Or new school, can you go to my website and hit the donate button? If you don't say, and listen, Evan, I kind of know where we're both at. And I know as a really well-paid, popular journalist, you're probably 6-7 figures.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm actually 8 figures.
No, actually, you know, on the serious side, you sit back and you might say to somebody, you know, I really need you to write me a check for $100. That would be a big help.
Okay.
And here's the other thing.
So you put a specific number on it. Okay.
Yeah, you tell us, and the other thing is whether it's fundraising for a political campaign or for a nonprofit, it's also helpful to sit back and say, listen, I've got a mailer going out and it's going to cost me $20,000 to get this mailer out. If you can send me a check for $200, you know, it's going to be a big help. And actually, if you know those long 3-page letters you get from politicians of all parties, you'll see that that's very often a tactic they use. This is the specific thing we want to use the money for. People like that.
All right. So what I want to clarify, since we're talking about how to run for office, and the reason we're talking about it today is tonight, Brew Coffee on Genesee Street in Rochester is hosting an event 7:30 p.m. free and open to the public called Breaking the Bubble, How to Run for Office. If you or someone you know are thinking about running, again, any level of government and service, this is important. What I'm hearing from you is don't run if you cannot make that phone call and ask for money. Like if I tell you, look, I'm not going to do it. I just, you're not going to get me to do it. Then don't waste your time.
Or find a really good fundraising director.
Okay.
If I could touch on...
Or be self-funded.
Yeah. Self-funded. Our president. And it's, you could... if I could build
Don't
a
make
little...
this political this hour, put up. Go ahead.
That was strictly a fact. He's self-funded, right? To touch on a little bit what Andrew's saying, you know, many people that have been involved in politics or have been invited to house parties... You know, a house party is strategic. It's not just showing up, you know, having a bottle of beer, a glass of wine, and chit-chatting. There's actually there's a form to it. And one of the forms is like it should be 45 minutes to an hour long. The first part of it is just the candidate being there and shaking hands. And then if it's a well-run house party, someone like me, if I was managing Andrew, at one point I would get everyone's attention. And I would say, thank you for coming here tonight. You know, we all share these values. Andrew's the man. I'll say all good things about him. And then I'll let Andrew speak. And then what I'll do is Andrew won't make the ask. Andrew will go off stage, so to speak, and I will thank everyone for coming. And then I will remind them how important it is that we get Andrew elected. And that the only way we can do that is with resources. And one of those resources is either your time, right? If you can volunteer, if you can put a lawn sign out, or if you can write us a check or donate. In fact, a good manager nowadays, what I would do, like when I was on some campaigns, I'll make sure I have a laptop there that's hooked up to the internet so people can donate right there. So the candidate is not put in a position of making the ask. They might make an individual ask, but it's somebody else making that ask.
All right, so let's get away from money. We've covered enough of the money question on if you want to run for office. And in our second half hour, we're going to talk about the following questions. How far in advance do you need to make this decision? If you're going to run for city council, lieutenant governor, state assembly, something else, there are going to be circumstances where sometimes something comes open late or somebody needs to try to recruit. But for the most part, if you're really thinking about this, how far in advance do you need to decide? How much time do you need to set aside? What kind of staff and organization do you need? And what makes a campaign work and what makes an effort fail? All of these questions and more answered by Gary Puttup, a former candidate for the 134th Assembly District seat, has a number of years in politics, in organizing, and is helping with tonight's event, leading the event called Breaking the Bubble, How to Run for Office at Brew Coffee Tonight. Andrew Hollister is a former candidate for a number of offices, Rochester City Council, and most recently, Lieutenant Governor on your ballot last Tuesday of New York State for the Libertarian Party. So let's get that break and come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, in our first hour, the Boy Scouts are allowing girls to join. And we will sit down with the Girl Scouts to hear their take on the change. Then in our second hour, there's a lot of concern about young people and not being able to figure out fact, truth from untruth. But it turns out a new study shows the older we are, the worse we are. We'll discuss. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and Jacqueline just writes to us to remind us that the location of the Breaking the Bubble event tonight is at the corner of Brooks and Genesee.
Oh, Brooks and Genesee, yes.
Brooks and Genesee. There is parking behind the building if you want to head out tonight. And maybe that's not just for you. Maybe you have a neighbor or a friend or a family member who you think really would be great on your town council or on the school board or in the state assembly or some kind of office in the future. This is a chance to really think about all of things that would be required. Andrew Hollister, you've run for multiple offices. How far in advance did you make those decisions? And how far in advance do you think people need to decide if they're going to do something?
It's never soon enough. So if you're looking at the 2019 election, you should be making your phone calls now.
You should now.
Be, yes, absolutely.
For
absolutely.
Next, for a year from now.
Yep. And that's for a small office. If you're going to do a larger office, I mean, what we found with governor and lieutenant governor is Larry started that campaign 15 months before Election Day, and that was not enough time. So, and it depends on how much backing you already have, party infrastructure. Like, there's a lot of factors that go into it. But if you're looking at something, say, town council, city council, you should be building your support now. And hopefully you're already an active member in your community, because if you're not, it's going to be way harder because you don't have name recognition, which is something we talked about before.
Mm. Gary?
I couldn't agree more. There's no such thing as starting too early. And I think, if anything, I think what surprises a lot of candidates is how far in advance you do have to prepare. I brought you can go to the New York State website and look up the election law. And the first call or the first date for getting petitions signed, and that's a process we can talk about, is June 5th. Well, you know, before June 5th, you have to be thinking well in advance, because you're going to need people to go out and pass petitions. And we can explain what that is if people don't know. But you need an infrastructure in place to do that. And you only have 3 or 4 weeks to complete it. So, the idea that somehow June 5th, you're going to say, well, I'm going to run for city council. That's not happening.
Again, tell me why you picked June 5th as a date, Gary.
That's actually the date on the calendar. Again, you can go to the election law. You can just Google New York State election law.
On the calendar for what?
Petitioning.
For petitioning.
For petitioning, okay.
Yeah, and for folks that may not be familiar and wonder, like, well, how do you get on a ballot? The way you get on a ballot is you have to basically show the Board of Elections, listen, I have X number of people, and it depends on the position that you're running for, that think that I would do a good job. And here are these petitions, and here are these signatures. You know, and that kind of starts the process. But and if I could build a little bit too on what Andrew says, you know, one of the things I advise people, if you're thinking of running for office, you should be deciding a year or so in advance, is this a job I want? You know, what does it involve? What do I want to do? And I think what Andrew was touching on too is if that's the case, I mean, you can run as an independent. It's very, very difficult.
Or a libertarian or a green.
Or a libertarian. Well, yeah, you know, but even libertarians, greens, et cetera, is still a party. So you're still going to have party
support. Okay, so you're drawing a distinction with running as an independent. Okay.
Yeah, I would say in New York, unless you're running for something very, very local, I mean, very local, and I'm not even talking like towns around here. It would almost be like Southern Tier Village Trustee. It's almost impossible to run as an independent because you just don't have the structure, the infrastructure, and the support that you're going to get to compete.
Mm. Okay, so it cannot be too far in advance. Start thinking now if you or someone you know, you think there are offices, if they're up for election next year. But if you're thinking of 2020 races, start thinking now.
Yeah.
Start thinking
oh,
about
yeah.
everything
yeah.
involved with it. And then before we move on to some other questions, I just want to ask Andrew, as someone who has run as a libertarian mm-hmm. for city council, for lieutenant governor, this country is very much currently and has been for a long time in a duopoly mode politically, whether you like it or not.
It's true.
And I want to ask you, and I direct this to you, but I want you to try to speak for Greens and Libertarians
yeah, yeah.
and other offices. When you run knowing that the odds of actually winning a race are extremely low because of that, first of all, I think there's something really admirable about that. I really mean that. I think that I admire that very much. And I want to ask you if you know in your heart that, hey, this is the way the landscape is. I'm not going to win this. Or do you think I'm going to be the one to change this? I'm going to be the one to get elected to city council. I'm going to get in front of enough people and convince them.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of both, right? You always have to be realistic and true to yourself. At the same time, if you don't set high goals, you're not going to achieve what needs to be done. So I'm always extremely realistic. I'm a numbers guy. That's something that maybe people don't know about me. I'm huge into numbers. I analyze stuff. I write algorithms to analyze things for a living. So I go into things with realistic expectations. But I also see that we need change, which is why I do what I do. And change through activism, through legislation, through the whole everything. So yeah, when I went into the city council race, I knew statistically speaking where we'd land. We actually landed better than the statistics showed anywhere, which was great. The next race was obviously even harder. But sometimes when you do this, it's about showing other people that there is an option and showing people that they have the opportunity to enact change and that people care and people listen. Not to say that people in the duopoly don't. But yeah, I think that some of this is about enacting change, and the rest of it is about building the momentum to set change in place.
Hmm. Let's before we then talk about what staff and organization looks like and who should be running campaigns and what you need to know about this, I want to listen to one more comment from Jen Lunsford. Jen had this to say about the difference between men and women when it comes to convincing, either convincing yourself or others convincing you to run. Now, she said there were a lot of people who had talked to her. I asked her, I said, you know, for those considering running for office, particularly women, what's a message, what's the first message for them that you take away from this recent state Senate race? Here's what she said.
That you can. You know, there's a lot of stats that show that, you know, the average man doesn't have to be asked to run for office at all. But women have to be asked 7 times. I had to be asked like 70 times. I had to be asked repeatedly and told over and over and over again that I could. And I want people to know that you can. It's about making choices, and you're going to sacrifice some things, but you can, and you're qualified. One of the silver linings, I think, of Donald Trump is that people went, oh, my God, anybody can do this, like legit anybody. And so many women who are supremely qualified have been sitting on the sidelines saying, oh, it's not for me, or there's someone else who deserves it more. And it's no, you go, whether you regardless of where you were born or what you look like or who you love, you can run for office. And if you have questions, you can contact me and I'll talk to you about it.
That's Jen Lensford, who ran for state senate and in that election last week lost a narrow one to the incumbent state senator, Rich Funke. So let me ask Gary Putup. When Jen is talking about how hard it is for some women to be convinced to run, I'm thinking about our listeners who might know a woman in their immediate sphere in their life who they think would be great on their local school board or town council or Congress or state assembly. And I wonder if they can go tonight on behalf of somebody else just to start learning. If they're about to make a phone call next week and say to their close friend, I want you to run for office, I learned some things. Is tonight going to be helpful?
Yeah, and to be clear, this isn't just about the candidate and the individual that wants to run. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. Quite frankly, in my experience is both running and managing campaigns, I actually think I like the managing part a little bit better. And yes, women should be encouraged. This is a little egotistical, but I'll say this. When I ran for state assembly and I was approached by the Monroe County Democratic Party, I only had one condition that I would run on. And that was that I had a young woman as a campaign manager, because I do think the idea that over half our population is so underrepresented and that women bring something to the table that is so important, that I'm glad, again, that someone like Jen ran. I think there are many factors that discourage women in our society from running. And there may just be the simple thing that, like, one of the things I tell candidates is you need to have an ego. I actually had one candidate tell me once, he says, well, I don't have an ego. I said, well, you have to have an ego. And it's not psychologically unhealthy. It's good to have an ego because you're going to need to do these things. But women, frankly, sometimes tend to care more about relationships than men do. And where I think that makes it difficult for them is it's easier, I think, in our society and culture for a man to have somebody say something bad about them and then to blow it off. And women take things to heart. And one of the things I tell candidates is, like, you know, when you're on Facebook or you see letters to the editor or what, don't read the comments, because you can get tied up in that. It is harder in this society and culture for women to run, but we need to encourage them to run. We need to support them. That's again why, and again, I'll put another plug in for Women Elect, .org, to teach them. And they bring something, and they should be. And again, I think with Jen, I think you're going to see her and others running again in the future.
I think she seemed to hint pretty strongly that she was really moved by being part of the process and wants to try to do it again, at least in some fashion. Mike writes to us on Twitter and says, here's a solution to money problems in elections. Limit all campaigns to 6 weeks. Limit spending to 2 times the position salary, and have electoral boundaries drawn by an independent panel. That works elsewhere. Mm-hmm. What do you think? The libertarian in the room, what do you think about that?
Well, I'm not big on government restrictions, right? So having somebody draw imaginary lines for things, for districts, setting time frames. Here's the thing. Campaigning in many aspects is building relationships. So I don't know how the government is going to be able to regulate what relationships you build in relation to your personal life, in relation to your organization, in relation to a campaign. I understand why that's a suggestion. I don't think it's plausible. I don't necessarily have a problem with limiting how much campaigns can spend. I just think that numbers change so much. It's going to be hard for the government to figure out what's okay to spend on a campaign. Mailers are expensive. So if you limit it to double the amount of the salary of the position, you might not even be able to mail to your whole base, not to mention print literature, do social media, So I'm not a big fan of regulations. But what I am a fan of is eliminating the ability for non-voting bodies to contribute to campaigns. So what do I mean by that? If you're not a human who can vote in an election, you shouldn't be funding it. So a corporation, LLCs, anything that's like a legal entity that's not a human being, I don't think should be contributing to campaigns.
Okay. Gary, what do you make of Mike's stuff?
You know, Andrew and I were actually talking about this very thing before we came in here. And if I could touch on two things he said, one is building relationships and name recognition. And when we talk about name recognition, we're not just talking about in the public, but name recognition amongst, I don't know how else to put this, but maybe the political powers or the players in the community. So you want to be, you want to join a committee. You want to be involved. You want to be involved in your community organizations so that people who are community leaders will know who you are. That's the important part. I personally like what they do in our beloved Canada, the True North, Strong and Free, is and it's very similar to what Andrew is saying, is that the only people that can contribute to campaigns are individuals, the actual natural persons. And then they limit an aggregate amount that you can give. And I believe it's $1,600. I might be wrong on that. So, for instance, if you and Andrew are both running, I can give $800 to you. I can give $1,600 to you. I can give, like, maybe I can give $600 to Andrew, $1,000 to you. But then I'm done. So if Megan Mack comes to me and says that she wants to run too, she's done. That is important for two reasons. It's a government regulation, but it doesn't regulate who can give. Everybody can give, and it's a reasonable amount. But I think more importantly is it cuts down on the corruption. Because say I give you $1,000, Evan, to run for state assembly, and now a bill comes up that I want you to vote for. It's very easy for you to sit back and say, like, you know what, you gave me $1,000, thank you very much, but I can get that someplace else. So it's doable. I don't know if what the caller or the person that sent the email, I don't know how we get that done. It would be nice, but then we have to deal within the reality of the system that we have.
John on Twitter says, can they talk about familiar or spouse support? What do they need to know about a campaign?
Wow, I can tell you this. Yeah, they need to know. If there's a spouse, if there's a domestic partner, if there's somebody in their life they're involved, they have to realize that that person's going to be gone for 9 months to a year. I mean, you're out knocking on doors every night. You're going to events on weekends and evenings. If the spouse isn't with the candidate, and that's one of the things I ask candidates on a first interview, is what does your wife think? What does your husband think? What kind of, if there's reluctance there, it's not going to work out. It's very important. They have to understand what's going on and the sacrifice they're going to make. If I just one thing, you know, whatever party, I will say this, whatever party a person is in, I have the deepest respect to people that run for office at every level. And I think some of this polarization in America is that people, the general public, may not understand how much goes into this. When I hear people badmouth politicians and say they're just in it for the money or they're just in it for the power, my first thought is they don't understand how hard it was to get there and the sacrifices they make. I respect everybody in every party that makes that decision to run for office.
What would you say to John?
Yeah, no, I would say absolutely your significant other needs to be a part. And it's funny, so over the last few days, people have come to me saying, hey, I'm thinking about running for office. Don't tell my wife, she doesn't know yet. And and my best advice to those people is your wife should definitely know before you're even talking about this. I'll just say the last 6-7 months, I've been gone 6 to 9 days at a time. You know, traveling the state, meeting with voters, the whole everything. And it's a lot of time to be away from your family, from your significant other. And if your spouse isn't on board or your significant other, you guys had to start by being really realistic with each other up front and let them know what the commitment's going to be. I was in a great situation where my spouse was all for it. She was extremely supportive. Not everybody's spouse or significant other feels that way. And it's got to be a serious conversation because you don't want to be in the middle of your campaign working really, really hard and then go home and have tension or hard times at home. Everything, the campaign and your personal life could unravel. So you don't want that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know if you heard on the news. I think it was, I believe, on NPR today with talking about Michelle Obama's new book and the interview with her and how what a strain it was on her marriage. And that the Obamas had to undergo marriage counseling, which is a good thing because they have a great marriage in that. But yeah, it's It's tough.
Well, as we all know, it would have been President Mitch Daniels in 2008 if not for his wife not wanting him to run. But I'm kidding about that. But the bottom line is, yeah, okay, good question, John. Appreciate that. A few minutes left as we talk about Breaking the Bubble, How to Run for Office, which is a free event tonight at Brew Coffee, 7:30 p.m. in Rochester's Brew Coffee, Breaking the Bubble, How to Run for Office. When it comes to building a staff in an organization, you might think, hey, I there's something I want to do, or there's somebody I know who would be perfect. That's one thing. But what else does it take? Andrew Hollister, you've run for city council. You've run for lieutenant governor. What else does it take beyond a candidate to do this?
So I've got a short list of directors that you would want together for a large-scale campaign. So we talked about your fundraiser, you know, a campaign manager whose job will be to kind of organize these people, somebody for media relations, communication person, social media director. That could be your media person, a volunteer coordinator, ground team manager. The volunteer coordinator might be able to share that responsibility. A treasurer, because of how New York State Board of Election laws are, you absolutely have to have an independent treasurer doing your money. And you as a candidate, please don't ever be a signer for your checks on your campaign. I know some people do it. It's way better to just have the treasurer as a signer. Some campaigns have legal counsel, a policy team or a policy person, and an events coordinator, which your manager and your fundraiser might balance that. But depending on how large the campaign is, that's a good start for individual roles.
Okay. Gary?
I agree with that list. And on a local campaign, a smaller campaign, you're going to have some of those mixed in. I couldn't agree more with Andrew on the treasurer. You know, I've run into candidates, and my son is the treasurer, my spouse is. That's a really, really bad idea. You don't need someone that's going to be an everyday supporter at the campaign office, but you need somebody that you can trust and is going to be independent. And I agree that sometimes I think the best thing to do is find someone that you know that has some experience and ask them and tell them, like, that's all they're going to do. You know, election law is serious. You can get yourself into a lot of trouble. It's not that hard, but you do need that independence. There's a lot of banks where you will end up setting up an account, and there's a number of banks in the area that actually have staff there. If you walk in and you tell them I'm running a campaign, they'll help walk you through the steps. The Board of Elections can help you walk you through those steps. I think the biggest thing is, and we touched on this earlier too, was also ego. And it's very easy to get wrapped up in the campaign and lose sight of your own principles and perspectives. And the first thing I would tell somebody is find someone that you can trust. And I have sat down with candidates and campaign managers and put this question right to them. Who's running the campaign? And if the candidate says that they are, then we set them straight. It's like working with a dog. No, the campaign manager runs the campaign. You're the candidate. Because you do need someone there that can straighten your head out at times. And this is the funny thing. This is a conundrum. You need a big ego to ask people for money. You need a big ego to sit back and say, you know what? This is a job that I think I can do a better job at than anybody else that I know. But at the same time, you have to have confidence that you can sit back and say, what am I doing wrong? And trust them that when they say, no, you know what, you're wrong on this, and you approach this poorly, and you have to be able to set that aside and listen to those people. Because especially in those last 2 months, when it gets really tense, it's real easy to lose perspective.
All right, so before the hour's out, I said we were done with money, but money is something that's inescapable when we talk about how to run for office. And our listeners may be wondering, can I run for office and not drain my own bank account? How much of your own money are you spending, Andrew? I'm not asking for a dollar figure, but I'm asking roughly what the toll is on your own personal finances if you want to run for office. Because we do have a lot of really capable people in this country who probably don't have the bank accounts. And frankly, you know, we're not as equal as we'd like to believe we are. But let's talk a little bit about that.
It's true. I mean, you're going to spend a lot of different money. Travel, overnight stays if you're doing that. Meals between events, you know, eating out instead of eating at home. Mm-hmm. You know, it does depend on your fundraising, though. Certain of those expenses can be covered if you fundraise for them. Others, if you don't have like a strong fundraising game, yeah, you're going to spend a lot of money. But don't forget about the money you're not making anymore because you're running. So that's something that I think a lot of people forget. When I'm out there meeting with voters, I'm not in front of customers. I'm not working. I'm not making money there either. So you do have to be really cognizant of that. You can't fundraise to cover your bills, but you can fundraise to get reimbursement on travel. You know, if you're in a situation for an overnight stay, you could fundraise for that too. That's going to depend on how much of that asking for money you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it, but it can be, if it's a local race, it doesn't have to be big like that because the travel is very minimal. Your overnight stay is your home, you know, so a city council race you can do without a lot of those expenses, and hopefully you fundraise to cover your literature and social media and stuff.
And about
like
20
that.
Seconds, what's the closing argument that you're convincing someone who's on the fence, wants to serve their community in some way, don't think that they can do it. They don't have the stomach for it. What's the closing argument,
Gary? Oh, they'll get all the candidates that you've ever seen put their pants on one leg at a time. There's nothing special or superhuman about politicians. They're just like you and me. And you're
I
probably
can confirm that.
And yeah, and look at the general public is at least as smart as most of our politicians. You can do it.
I can also confirm.
Yeah.
Tonight, Breaking the Bubble, How to Run for Office, Brew Coffee, 7:30 p.m. Gary will be there. Good luck with that. It's a nice public service, and I appreciate you coming in here. And Andrew Hollister, I want to reiterate again here. I always enjoyed the conversation, and I want to echo what Gary said, too. Our republic is stronger when more people can run and do run for office, whether it's R, D, L, G, or otherwise. Thanks for doing it, and thanks for sharing your perspective here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I suspect that means you're going to run again for something.
I haven't committed to anything yet.
I hope he does.
You better start thinking in advance.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Max, the producer. They are a team that you would elect 100 times out of 100. I'm just the host. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks.